John and Lance, being joined right now by Robert Klemko of Sports Illustrated, wrote a nice piece on Ray Lewis, and he's joining us right now to talk a little Ray. Robert, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I saw your little Twitter tete-a-tete with Jason Whitlock. That was fun, huh?
Yeah, we get into it from time to time. I got to stop doing that. Twitter is... it's really seductive in that way.
And before you know it, you're arguing with people. I didn't get to see it. What was it? What was it about?
He took exception to your Ray Lewis slant.
Yeah, Whitlock defends Ray. You know, he's been on Whitlock's show before, and they're close friends. So he didn't care for the article.
You know, I don't know. What did you think of his speech the other day?
It was, it was pretty classic Ray Lewis. I mean, it looked like how they describe his pregame speeches. The sweat, the pacing, you know, the yelling. I guess if you're a Ravens fan and, you know, you're into that and that inspires you, you know, that was a cool moment.
You know, this is, you're a guy who's never back down from anything. I mean, one of the things I respect is that you'll take on some uncomfortable situations. And one of the things, and I was bringing this up on the show, that new media, there is no accountability in quote unquote new media. You're from a journalistic background where there are standards. Once you write a piece, you're going to give the other side a chance to comment. So you were there getting your assignment editor, I guess. I don't know if you pitched it or they just came up with it, but they wrote an article about the victims from the 1999-2000 season at the Atlanta Super Bowl party where Ray Lewis was directly involved, and there were two murders. And he got off from that, and we know that famously, one of the coats with blood on it just disappeared, and no one knew where it went, one of the pieces of evidence. Well, anyway, an article was written all these years later when Ray was going out, and he was on his final, and there was this feel-good story about Ray Lewis, but an article was written about, what about the victims' families? How do they feel? Where are they right now? And you went to go get a quote from Ray Lewis in the locker room, which is probably wasn't your favorite thing that you're going to have to do that day, I would imagine. Before we get into what happened, how do you handle those situations where you've got to go get into a situation that you know could get confrontational?
Yeah, you know, like you said, it's a responsibility when a story is being written about a subject where people are speaking disparagingly or criticizing that person, that you give them an opportunity to comment. And so my assignment editor sent out an investigative reporter to talk to these families who are now living in Ohio, I believe, of the two victims in those killings. For me, you know, I was 23, and that was my first year covering the NFL. I just graduated from college. And I didn't really want to do it, but I felt it was important, and I felt I might get something interesting out of Ray. I mean, who knows? I mean, he might have reached out to these people and tried to make amends. You know, I might have learned something from that. But, you know, what I was actually hoping for was just a quiet no comment so I could go about my day. But, you know, the reason that I went to Ray in the locker room as opposed to do it in the press conference is because I didn't want to distract from everybody else's job and have Ray abruptly in the press conference and him walk out and then nobody else could get any questions in.
Which happened the other day with Tom, and you mentioned Tom Brady when the Julian Edelman stuff came up about the trainer. He shut down his interview, and so the guys who were there, it was Ben Violine, I think is how it's pronounced. He's the one that asked the question, and then everyone's like, way to grandstand, dude, when the reality is they will shut it down on questions like that.
Right, and I think covering the NFL for the last few years, it's changed in the sense that, you know, back in the day, you could walk up to a Tom Brady at his locker after a game, and if you're along, you know, if you're around the team a bunch, and say, "Hey, we're doing this story. Just wanted to see if you want to comment," and then that's where it ends. But they really restrict and limit the access to these players, so to these group settings, so that you feel uncomfortable asking that question. And you know, I that's why it went down the way it did with my case.
wild. You know, when we were talking about this story just a little while ago, and you're asking a question that was 13 years old about two victims that died, and Ray was there, and Ray played a role in it. And the families of it's 13 years old, but you know what? Those families don't forget about that. What did you find with the families when you went to talk to them?
So they sent an investigative reporter who'd been, covering this sort of thing for 30 years out to do that. My role, I was doing day-to-day stuff for USA Today on the Washington and Baltimore teams, and just, writing articles about football trends, honestly. I hadn't really dove into anything super deep like that yet. Like I said, it was my first year with a real job. And so they just asked me, because I was familiar with those locker rooms and I knew Ray a little bit, to go and try to elicit comment for this other reporter who was, in Ohio working on this story.
So, well, fact of the matter is that those people don't forget, you were right. The voiceless need a voice.
Right. Their lives had been tremendously impacted by what happened, and they wanted answers from Ray. And at the same time, at that time in 2013, Ray Lewis was retiring. They were making a playoff run, and people were talking about his legacy. And I remember Commissioner Roger Goodell threw it out there that Ray might have a job at the league office, and he might, work as an ambassador to the game to some degree. And that's when my editors were like, oh, hold on a minute. Let's see how these people who were affected in 2000 still feel about Ray Lewis.
I struggle with the Ray Lewis thing because I know that there's stuff that didn't go down. I mean, there's stuff that went down. We don't know the details, blah, blah, blah. Everyone loves to use the fact we don't know all the details. And they use it as, we don't know all the details, so you're not allowed to comment on it. And it's never, we don't know all the details, so I need to shut up because some bad things may have happened. It's never in that direction. We're seeing some of that with Roberto Osuna, with some some fans here locally right now. But with Ray Lewis, one of the reasons I struggle, Robert, is that as a football player, there's no doubting his greatness. And if we view him as a football player, there's no question about his Hall of Fame credentials. Here's where I struggle. I agree with a lot of people that something may have happened that was directly Ray Lewis, at the best case scenario, witnessed and knew exactly what happened and did partake in obstruction of justice. There's no question about that. Worst case scenario, he was directly involved, and we know what that means. I mean, directly involved with a murder. Since that point, there is no getting around that he has been very influential in helping prisoners in jail, in prisons, at-risk youth. He's created jobs. He's done a lot of really, really good things. His messages have been really, really good. I think one area where it seems to not matter for people, and for my radio partner John here, and frankly my wife, I found this out from her yesterday because she was listening to the show, they don't like the preachy. They think it comes off as disingenuous, that Ray Lewis comes off as disingenuous. I don't know if that's true. I think there are a lot of people who feel that way about Ray.
Yeah, I think that especially in the Baltimore area where people are more familiar with his philanthropy and all the work that he's done with youth, especially that you mentioned, they would like for all this to go away. About the 2000 killings. And I think the best way for Ray to have done that is afterwards to have done a real interview on it, to have addressed his role, however many years later, and to say, I've turned my life around. I've stopped putting myself in those situations, and I've dedicated my life to serving others. But instead, what you get from Ray is a lot of sermonizing and a lot of words that say nothing. And I think if I had been working media relations for the Ravens, in the early 2000s, or I'd been Ray's agent or part of Ray's crew, I might have advised him to handle all this differently. I am not one of those people on Twitter screaming about a white coat. I understand that Ray Lewis's legacy is now bigger than that. But I had a job to do, and I think the bigger point of the article is this is what it looks like with some of these PR staffs around the NFL when they decide to rally around a player and insulate a player from the media. It doesn't happen with all players. I mean, less established guys, you know, this is a league with a lot of expendable players. And so less established guys don't get protected that way. But Ray Lewis and a handful of other guys, and certainly all the quarterbacks, do get protected that way.
Robert Klump.
Media. I was just going to say, media relations, you've dealt with
them. Oh, my God.
I have. It's very hit or miss what you're dealing with media relations in any given market.
They can spin stuff.
You guys have a great one in Houston and Amy Palchik.
Yeah. She's no nonsense, though.
She's widely respected around the league.
She is. And
Kevin Cooper was, and Tony Wiley, and yeah.
Now, Tony Wiley is, now he's a gatekeeper.
Right. No, Tony.
Tony's known as a gatekeeper.
He really
like,
is.
How about this? I said this, Robert, and this is not against, this is Tony's job, and I actually like Tony. I'm friends with Tony. But Tony knows that I wasn't a big fan of this. Rick Smith was about to be announced as, and he actually was, and we were at the home of the Texans. They did a press conference on Rick Smith's press conference. We had it on 610 at the time. And I said during the interview, I said after the interview on the show with John here, because we were doing the show back then in 2006, and I said, you know, it's important because Gary Kubiak is the one who brought Rick Smith in. I said, it's important that Rick isn't a yes man to Gary Kubiak, that he doesn't just fall in line with everything Kubiak wants. There needs to be, you know, a separate opinion and an independent voice so that they can have a conversation about what's really going on, and he needs to be able to dissent. It's important, and it's important that he's not a yes man. Well, Rick Smith's wife heard the phrase yes man, and that's all she needed, and she went to Rick Smith and told him, Lance Erlein was calling you a yes man. You're a yes man, yes man. And so it got to Tony. Tony calls me up and bitches me out about how you can't be called. He goes, you're never going to get an interview with Rick Smith now. I said, what? About what? He goes, because you called him a yes man on the air. I said, what? I said it's important for him not to be a yes man. I stand by that. I had to go meet with Rick Smith before the draft after the draft when he was hired, sometime thereafter, about what I said, and his wife was deeply offended about I called him a yes man, and it was dangerous for a person that is respected in the market to label him as a yes man, and that has connotations.
Who was this respected guy that you're talking about?
Rick Smith. Well, this is early in the process.
Oh no!
But and I mean, I was just like, really? I've got to answer to this. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, that's the stuff that happens. So you feel good though that Robert Klemko with his SI wrote the piece about Ray Lewis, who was protected by the PR. Do you feel good about the fact that he was praying for you though, Robert?
You know, that was one of the oddest lines. That was probably the oddest line I've ever heard from an NFL player. And, you know, I've only been doing this 6 years, but for him to say it didn't matter what I was saying, that he forgave me, and I was number one in his prayers the night before.
You said some pretty scandalous things.
I told that story to a group of, you know, old friends a few weeks later, sitting around in my apartment watching the playoffs, and one of my buddies sat there for a few minutes after the conversation ended, and he had a revelation, and he said, you know, I don't think he prayed for you.
Well, if your friends know you that well, maybe they're right. You don't know. But that the fact that that you didn't have to apologize to him is nice, though. That was awfully nice of him. Yeah. Awfully nice. Robert Klemko.
And I tried to talk about this with Ray, you know, once he entered the media and I saw him after a game, I said, hey, Ray, you know, Robert Klemko used to write for USA Today, had that whole thing in 2013, would love to chat with you about it and kind of explain my, you know, what happened from my end. And he just completely brushed me off and said, you know, go talk to, here's my assistant's card, talk to my assistant.
It would have been so much better for you to put a hand on your shoulder and said, dear Heavenly Father. And immediately busting in a prayer for you. I would have liked that.
That would have been good. Robert Klemko, Sports Illustrated, right here on ESPN 97.5.
But before we let you go, then your thoughts on T.O. I watched, if you watch Ray's speech, Randy's speech, Brian Dawkins, really all of them, really good speeches. They usually are. T.O.'s speech was just as egocentric as you could possibly. Like, I have been wrong. It took me 3 years to get in. The system is broken where players like me have to wait. And I was like, this is why it's real. I'm really glad T.O. didn't go now, because it kind of would have ruined it.
All I could think was first world problems. T.O. is complaining about, you know, not being a first ballot Hall of Famer. And yes, he has a beef about the system. And just for me personally, I don't think that it should only be up to beat writers and longtime NFL writers to vote for the Hall of Fame. I think there are more perfect systems that you could go to. I think that their whole thing about not considering outside football factors, it has to be BS if T.O. isn't a first ballot Hall of Famer. At the same time, this is a really cool accomplishment. You're still accepting the gold bust. You're still joining a fraternity of all the greatest wide receivers and NFL players to ever join the game. And I really feel like T.O. missed, well, what's that expression? I think he missed the forest for the tree.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And he didn't take a step back and treat that occasion, whether or not he went to the ceremony or he did it at Chattanooga, I don't care. But he didn't take a step back and appreciate that occasion for what it was and what it said about what he had accomplished as a player.
That's Robert Klemko, Sports Illustrated, right here on ESPN 97.5. Great catching up with you. It's time. Football's here, baby. We appreciate you hanging with us. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
Thanks, Robert.
There's Robert Klemko.